D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Talking Predators, and we have a lot of calls to get to. Here's what spurred this all on. I said before the break, for those of you who value making the playoffs every year, may I submit to you Exhibit A of the LA Kings, who have now lost in the first round 5 years in a row. They've lost 8 consecutive playoff games dating to last season. The Predators, I would argue, in Willie's corner, I would argue the Predators are in a better position today than the LA Kings are as an organization, but I do not want the Predators to become the Kings. I do not want them to top out at the Kings, where they make the playoffs every year and don't win. We've got a ton of calls, and I can already tell based on who's on the line, who's going to agree with me and who's going to agree with Willie. So we'll go in chronological order. Let's start with Ryan in Nashville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Ryan, thank you for calling and waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Adam, you're right. I need to tear down. Willie, the Kings never went through a rebuild. They went through an age-out process. The only reason they didn't sign players to keep trying for a cup is because they had no cap space to do it. They gave Doughty $11 million. They gave Quick money. They gave Kopitar money. They gave all these players money. So, yes, they had to use the prospect pool to replace the players on the roster when they were retiring and aging out. They never went through a rebuild. They didn't trade Quick until Vegas won a cup. They kept trying for the playoffs and kept trying for a cup every single year.
That's not true. That's not true. 2018, 2019, 71 points. 2019, 20, 64 points. 2021, 49.
What was their cap space? What was their cap space in their year?
Well, this is my point, that a lot of those teams,
thank you, Ryan,
and the Kings won 2 cups. So that's the price you pay most of the time, is you do have your core age, right? Even there's still a few guys left from those teams. Kopitar is one of the last standing, and
it's
he's
now just
retire.
Drew Doughty.
Now it's Doughty.
Yep.
And Quick is still in the league, but he's one of the older players in the league. So they did an amazing job staying around. But that roster did age out. But that's my point most of the time, is most of the time when teams go through the full rebuild, it's really because they don't have another option. If you have an option of going backwards as opposed to an option of building creatively without going all the way down to the bottom, I would choose to avoid the commitment to go all the way to the bottom. But the Kings did rebuild. Would you agree with that, Adam?
I would say they underwent some sort of retool, rebuild, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Use the word. You know how Elliot Freeman always says, people don't like to use the word rebuild. It's a scary word. They underwent some sort of remodeling.
And I thought it was a smart way to go. The Kings did a pretty good job, all things considered. They didn't slip into a Buffalo vortex, right, where it took way too many years to get to where they are now. And by the way, Buffalo looks really good right now. They might go pretty deep here, the way they're playing. But it just took so long. And now, like, if I'm a Kings fan, Adam, and you sold me on the rebuild the first time, the first time around, I could say, okay, they really didn't have a choice. This is just what needs to happen. We've got our 2 cups. But now if you're trying to sell that for a second time, that's a tough sell, I think. And right now, it is going to be tough because they may not have a choice. Their prospect pool is now very thin, and their top-level players are pretty old.
Let's go to Scott in Hendersonville on our phone line. Scott, thank you for calling and waiting. Please go ahead.
Well, yes, we know that you don't want us to be the LA Kings. You want us to be Buffalo so that our grandchildren can enjoy the perpetual rebuild.
Can I ask you a question, Scott?
Of going to the playoffs once a generation.
Can I ask you a question,
it's
Scott?
Wonderful.
Yes. Do you mind? Thank you. First of all, I'm saying this because I do appreciate, even though we disagree with each other, I do appreciate you calling in and interacting. So I just want to get that off the front end.
Okay.
Would you be satisfied if the Predators made the playoffs 5 years in a row and never made it out of the first round and went 8-20 in those 28 playoff games over 5 years, including 8 consecutive playoff losses? Would you be satisfied by that?
I'm going to answer this.
That's not my question. Answer my question.
No,
would you
I'm
be satisfied?
I'm going to answer you, and I'm going to show you where your entire premise is flawed. Because
okay. Go ahead.
The value of making the playoffs, the Kings were not playing 7 rookies this year. The value of us making the playoffs is we were playing 7 rookies every night. and them making the playoffs would pay off the next time we make the playoffs. That's what it was all about. The Kings losing four in a row, it has a lot to do with, yeah, running into the Oilers every year. That was a big part of it. So it's in no way analogous to this year's Preds team because they don't play. They are an old team. Their core is old. Their backups are old. They were nowhere near in our situation. So that was why, in particular, this Preds team making the playoffs, who we have not been in the playoffs the last few years, would have been a good thing. And it is an imperative for next year. I hope you understand the difference.
Thank you for the call, Scott. And I do appreciate our back and forth, even if we get a little feisty with each other. Let's go to Adam in Portland on our phone line. Adam, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Adam, I like that you said you could tell whose side you're on. Go ahead. Who do you think side that I lean on?
Mine.
You know me pretty well.
Mine.
I absolutely think that getting in there and getting swept out would be better than what we just experienced, which is being one point out and not making the playoffs. I would much rather go to the playoffs every year. Our organization, because we're stuck in such a spot, dude, where our organization loves this 8-year non-trade goalie. It felt like it's blasphemy to say that Roman Josi couldn't possibly be traded for assets. Like we're not able to tear it down properly. So what's the point? You might as well sneak into the playoffs and get put out. Watching the Stars in the Minnesota the other day, I'm sitting here like hurting because I'm like, God, I wish the Preds could play one of these teams. We'll probably get beat, but that was so much fun to watch. And I don't care how much of like football fans we are, the best sports in the world is NHL playoff hockey, and I'll fight anybody tooth and nail on that, especially when it goes to overtime. I just can't stand us being out of it. So that's where I'm at, dude. Yeah, I would get in even if we keep getting beat.
Okay, actually, I was wrong. Thank you, Adam. I thought Adam would agree with me.
I do think Scott's point, going back one call,
sure,
was a good point, that the Kings have to be a little bit downtrodden in that they doubled down. They traded for Artemi Panarin. They went for it. They fired their coach at a weird time of the season to try to get in and go for it. And they lost with not a real impressive showing. And even if Kevin Fiala had been there, I'm not sure they would have been good enough to really challenge the Avalanche. And that probably was going to be the case for the Predators. I think the Predators maybe could have done better in that round. But still, we know that would have been a huge underdog situation. But Scott's point is, give the Predators credit. They have been compiling behind the scenes as they have been trying to make the playoffs a prospect pool that's pretty good and pretty deep. They haven't traded future assets to try to barely get into the playoffs, whereas the Kings did feel like they were banking on this prospect pool that has not really panned out. That's the biggest reason why they haven't been able to get past the Oilers. And the uniqueness of the draw, I think it's a little deceiving. Having to play the Oilers in the first round four straight years when you're playing McDavid and Draisaitl, a Predator fan ought to know how tough that is. So I don't think you can just be defined by you lost in the first round. It's who did you lose to?
Here's my ultimate concern. My ultimate concern is Predators fans are going to talk themselves into what Kings fans may have been talking themselves into in 2021. Hey, we've had some down years. We've built up this prospect pool, probably some good players in there, and we've seen what happened with the Kings now that we have 4 or 5 years of hindsight. And who knows? Maybe the Predators, the new GM, by the way, where is the new GM? We'll discuss that at some point this week.
At some point, you got to hire somebody.
Right. The new GM may decide to do what the Kings did back then. They may decide to trade one of those prospects for a player with a proven NHL track record, put him in the lineup, and try to compete in the playoffs. We don't know yet. But my whole point in all of this, and I mention this all of the time, like I know that some of you can't stand when I talk about this, as one texter said. Only idea I dislike more than losing on purpose is continuing to listen to someone talk about it every afternoon between 3 and 6. To be fair, it's not every afternoon. It's some afternoons. It's not every afternoon. It's some afternoon.
Every other afternoon.
Yeah, maybe every other afternoon. But ultimately my point is this. You know, I understand your point too, Willie. The Kings, the way that the playoff format is, they drew the Oilers 4 years in a row with two of the best players on the planet. That team went to the Stanley Cup final.
In two of those years.
My argument would be...
Lost to Vegas at another one of the years. That was, I think, in the conference final, maybe something.
Thereabouts.
So
maybe
they,
second round.
They've run into a very tough first round matchup in all five of these years, right? Four with the Oilers, and then this year, the best team on paper in the whole league.
And then my argument would be, I would want the Predators in this same scenario to build themselves up so that they aren't a wild card team. So they don't necessarily have to run into the best team in the Western Conference. Because to be a great team, you do have to beat other great teams.
But that's the problem with the two versus three, which the Kings were in a couple of those series, right? The two versus three in the Pacific, where you're facing another heavyweight. It's what we're seeing right now for the Tampa-Montreal series. Two great teams, Dallas and Minnesota. Those are the two best series going.
I get it.
Right now, because the teams are really, really good. It's super even. It's wildly entertaining hockey. But two of those teams are going out in the first round. Two really good teams.
My overall point is, I don't know how Kings fans are feeling today after their team was swept. They're probably really sad because Anže Kopitar retired, and he's an outstanding player. But I'm sure they're also feeling a bit disgruntled. I don't want Predators fans to feel the same way.
Okay, let me ask you this, Adam. Do you think there was anything wrong with the Kings' plan? Like the plan that how they went about it to bridge themselves from two cup winners in 2014 to a couple of years where, okay, we're assessing, can we still hang on? No, we're not quite good enough anymore. We got to move on. From that point until now, I don't really have a problem with their plan. They had some trades that if they could do it over again, maybe they would go differently. But they built it. That was not flawed decision-making. They just haven't gotten the results. And I think sometimes that's unfortunately hockey. Right? So the plan. Did you have a problem with the way they built the team? Like when they traded for Pierre-Luc Dubois, which was a big, big problem in retrospect, that was a bust. But at the time, Pierre-Luc Dubois looked like he was the third pick in the draft. He looked very promising, and it just didn't happen.
I don't disagree with what the Kings did. They did make some mistakes along the way. And again, I acknowledge that the Predators have yet to make the same mistakes. I do think the Predators today are in a better position than the Kings are today. That is for sure. I don't think I could argue that. But at some point, I want the Predators to A, get back into the playoffs, and B, be a legitimate threat once they do. And we'll see what the new GM does again.
Do you think the Kings were a threat? Not this year. I'm talking about in the 5 years where you keep talking about they've lost the first round for 5 years. I think they were a threat.
Without going back and looking at each specific team.
Like, they weren't 110-point teams, right? But they were...
The thing about the Kings is they're always good defensively. They usually get good goaltending. They can't score for crap. That's part of the issue with the Kings, is that they cannot keep up with the Oilers, and in this case, the Avalanche. They don't have the offensive firepower to do that. So, look, we'll continue this conversation. It will heat up once the new GM gets hired. 615-737-1025. Outstanding participation. I didn't mean to fire y'all up today.
This is not an easy thing. I fully admit, while I'm hammering away at Adam, the Predators could have no choice in a couple years if they try to keep together, and this prospect pool turns out to be like the Kings, where it kind of dissipates and it doesn't really fortify things. Then the Predators may have no choice but to go backwards and rebuild. But that, to me, is why you rebuild, because you run out of other options.
615-737-1025. Let's get back into the NFL draft. Diego Pavia. He did not get drafted, but he did get an invite to rookie minicamp. We'll discuss Diego Pavia and what's next for him. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. You hear the song. Baltimore, Maryland. That's where Diego Pavia is headed. Diego Pavia did not get drafted. at the NFL draft this past weekend, but he has accepted an invitation to attend this weekend's rookie minicamp with the Baltimore Ravens. You may have seen some of these numbers going around. Diego Pavia was the first Heisman finalist to go undrafted since 2013 finalist Jordan Lynch, quarterback from Northern Illinois, who finished behind Jameis Winston and A.J. McCarron in the voting. Pavia was also the first Heisman runner-up to go undrafted since 2002 runner-up Brad Banks, quarterback from Iowa, who finished behind Carson Palmer in Heisman Trophy voting. And I saw a lot of people dunking on Diego Pavia this weekend for not getting drafted because of all of his bravado. I don't think Pavia, Willie, going undrafted is any sort of surprise. But one thing that the two of you mentioned to me earlier is this is different than Pavia signing with the Ravens as an undrafted free agent. He's just getting an invite to rookie minicamp. It's the equivalent of a hockey player getting a professional tryout in training camp. He's going to go there to try to win himself a contract. But what do you think? A, what do you think of the fit? I want to know what Derek thinks of the fit, being a former Raven. I want to know what Derek thinks of the fit. But I also just want your, Willie, I want to start with your opinion just on Pavia going undrafted and seemingly a lot of people taking glee in the fact that Pavia didn't go draft.
You know, I'm not surprised, but it is. I think I'm a little surprised that nobody gave him a straight-up undrafted free agent contract. I thought somebody would give him that. But he not only didn't get drafted, but he's got to try out to just get to training camp. That's what it amounts to. I'm not even sure if it equates to a PTO, because in a PTO, at least you get to come to training camp. Like, you're in the real camp.
That is true.
With a chance to make the team. He's not guaranteed to make it to training camp. He's got to do well in the OTAs, etc. And you wonder, too, with Clark Lee's relationship with the new coach for the Ravens, Jesse Minter, who was the defensive coordinator and safeties coach under Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. If Clark Lee didn't have something to do with, hey, Jesse, look, you got to trust me on this. He's worth bringing into camp. But he's got to win the job in this rookie camp. He's got to be the best among the rookies. I think the job opening is maybe a third string practice squad quarterback for the Ravens. That's what you're trying out for. So I'm curious how Diego handles this, because I don't think you can go into that camp saying, hey, I'm supposed to be a starter in this league. Like, the bravado will take you so far, but you're not looking for that. The job description is we want a developmental third-string quarterback, right? We're not looking for a starter right now. We have a starter.
Yeah, they got started for a very long time. So they're not going to be looking for one unless injury, but for the next 5 to 10 years almost.
So do you want bravado from your number three quarterback who's going to be on the practice squad? I don't know if that's something you absolutely have to have.
Yeah, I think, you know, his strength has become a detriment to him as well. The cockiness.
I thought you were going to say the brass blanks.
Yes. No, the brash, the confidence, the cockiness.
The testicular fortitude.
That too.
Yes.
But it's this line that he walks, and he's found himself on the wrong end of it a few times. But I think this is a situation where the sort of bravado and workmanlike attitude or the way he prepares, I think it may mesh well with the Baltimore Ravens. He's gritty. He finds every, you know, angle to try to win. He's always doing what's best for the team. He's a team player, and he sort of rallies people. He rallied the team last year. So he has been a leader and has done it, you know, pretty good. I know he's had his issues, a few of those. I get that. But he led that team well. He, over the last 2 years, he's led Vanderbilt program really well. That means a lot. listen, he may not. The odds of him being a starting quarterback in this league is, I probably have a better chance of winning the lottery, honestly. Because his measurables are not there.
Yes.
But what he is that he's a winner. But unfortunately, when you get to this league, you got to be more than just, you got to have the measurables to go along with that too, especially at that position. You can be a winner, but if you're 5'10 at quarterback, you know, you don't have a strong arm, that's hard. Hell, it was hard for Bryce Young.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a much better passer than Diego, and it's still been hard for him because of his height. So you throw in the things off field, and then you look at how does he sort of project to the league. He doesn't really. But that doesn't mean a team couldn't bring him and he could develop and he couldn't be on their team in some form or fashion. Now, he fits sort of what Baltimore runs, the RPOs and all this other stuff. So he sort of fits in that. But if you're not bringing him in to be your backup, you're just not. You're bringing him in to hopefully develop him, and maybe he can help you in some other ways.
Now, can I get a quick shout out for Clark Lee? You know how many players they got drafted over the weekend?
One.
They won 10 games in the SEC last year. They had one guy drafted, Eli Stowers, who's a heck of a player. But that is a brilliant roster construction, right, of a collective. And, of course, the uniqueness of Pavia being one of the better players on the college level in the country, maybe the second best player, as it turned out if you go by the Heisman, right? So that's a caveat. But the other teams in the SEC, I don't know who had the most picked out of the SEC over the weekend, but that's pretty amazing. And so we'll see where Clark Lee can take it from here if he can get a higher level of talent going forward. But to win 10 in the SEC and have one guy picked, that's pretty impressive.
As our very own Joe Rexroad noted at The Athletic, quote, Vanderbilt had one player drafted this year, tight end Eli Stowers, in the second round by the Eagles. I love that fit, by the way. Going back to the 2010 season, 59 SEC teams have won at least 10 games. Those teams had 6.8 players drafted on average. And Vanderbilt has how many?
One.
Right. One. So, yes. A feather in the cap of Clark Lee. I do want to go back to Rexroad because he wrote a column about Diego Pavia on The Athletic with the headline, Diego Pavia's NFL plight is misunderstood, just like him. And here is some of what Rexroad wrote. Quote, it's possible to be a great college football player and not a top NFL prospect. It actually happens all the time. But I am surprised Pavia has to go the minicamp tryout route with the Baltimore Ravens rather than getting a free agent deal from a team. The difference there, from a signing or seventh round flyer to a tryout, might be where his personality played a factor. As Dane Brugler wrote, the quote, life of the party persona wasn't for every team, and all of them probably considered the potential for distraction, the attention around a significant public figure who would be fighting just to make the roster. Maybe Pavia hurt himself in interviews. Certainly he had some unimpressive public moments, and those are on him. But the public enemy number one stuff is bizarre, even in the context of an NFL fan and media world that wastes no opportunity to go pig and slop at the first sign of someone else's misery.
I do think, and that's where I was going a little bit, D-Mace, was like, I could see an NFL head coach going, in my grand scheme of things, if I see this guy as a project, a third stringer, a practice squad guy, I don't really need all of the social media stuff that Diego Pavia is expertly used to his advantage. It doesn't work for the practice squad guy.
No, it doesn't. That's a guy you just want to come in. You want that person to come in and just work. You don't want him to be the story. I think the NFL, you know, this is not the first time they've sort of had to confront something like this where, you know, whether it be they drafted a guy, a team drafted a guy, or a team didn't draft a guy because of what attention it would bring, you know, to an individual, to the team. So Diego's not the first, and he will not be the last. Listen, there were teams that probably didn't want to bring Tim Tebow in because of all of the, you know, the media that would have came with him. And him, you know, we saw it real time. Where teams, it was like soon as, you know, he came in, the media just swarmed. And he wasn't even a starting quarterback. He was fighting for a spot on the team. And some franchises just don't like it. Like, if you're not the guy or guy that is in play to get, you know, playing time and be a contributor to this team, they don't want you to come in here and be the story when you haven't done anything. And it's a long shot for you to make the team. And maybe some people chose not to draft Diego because of that. I think it really had to do with the measurables.
I mean, it ultimately had to do with the measurables. Of course. Because how many times in the history of sports has a team put up with someone who has the ego of Diego Pavia, who is 6'5" and 250 pounds and can throw the ball 80 yards down the field?
Listen, he would
have that measurables.
If he was 6'1".
If he was the average quarterback.
Exactly. He would have got drafted.
Yes.
No matter what these things did.
Literally
which wasn't
the average quarterback.
Yeah, it wasn't great what he did, but they would have looked at that, and to them, the potential would have sort of overshadowed whatever problem they thought he had off the field. But in his case, it's unfortunate. The guy, I would love to have him, like, on my team. But the problem is that you only have so many slots. That's the problem. And where do you put him? Do you put him as your quarterback? Do you put him as a special teams guy? Do you bring him in as a utility guy? Let him be on a practice squad for a while? That's the problem. It's like, I would love to have a guy that prepares, that just knows how to win, that can, you know, get everybody and to rally around him. You need guys like that in your locker room, not necessarily starters, but you can use guys. But when you don't have the measurables either, it's hard for GMs to actually draft you.
Let's go to Tim quickly on our phone line. Tim, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, and y'all just said it, and I got a couple of things. So let me, if you would, give me just a minute. Pavia, you when we talk about why he does all what he does, he wasn't recruited out of high school. He went to a junior college. When he won a national championship, he wasn't recruited out of there. Jerry Kill happened to see him and signed him at New Mexico State. Nobody wanted him after New Mexico State. He went to Vanderbilt because Jerry Kill went there. The kid has been an uphill battle everywhere he's ever went. If you took his numbers this year and you put no name on it and put 6'1" as a height, he would have been a top 10 draft pick. His numbers were better than Mendoza's this year. Look at him.
Thank no argument for me.
Yeah.
We talked about that at the time.
Yeah, we talked about it during the Heisman.
I'm glad he's going to get a shot because, look, he will prove he belongs if he goes in there and does, if he can still do anything close to what he did in the college level. Nobody thought he was going to do that at Vanderbilt. Because he did some impressive things at New Mexico State, and I still didn't think anything of it when they rolled him out there against Virginia Tech. And as that game wore along, I was like, what do we have here? This guy has got a little something. But it's different in college than it is in the NFL. Now he's got to start the whole process over.
We made a fuss about Reuben Baines' arm length.
We did.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't want to draft him.
An eighth of an inch.
A bunch of people took him off their draft.
He slid to 15th or
something. Exactly. So you look at Diego, he doesn't have the measurables.
No, he would be one of the shortest quarterbacks.
Yeah.
To play an NFL game, if he were ever to play an NFL game. But look,
let's just hope he can do that. He can get in there and at least show while he's there that, hey, this guy's got a little something different. Let's keep him around for a while.
615-737-1025. Diego Pavia goes undrafted this weekend, but gets a rookie minicamp invite from the Baltimore Ravens. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show coming up next with some interesting comments from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver and the city of Nashville. We'll talk about that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.
I'm sure you saw there was a lot of headlines, LeBron's comments about Memphis, and then talk about potentially moving a team to Nashville. Is that on the table at all, or is that just people just kind of running with something?
You know, well, first of all, players I talk to all the time like playing in Memphis. I've never heard that issue of players not wanting to be in Memphis, so number one. Number two, you know, the owner of Memphis Grizzlies, a guy named Robert Pera, has no interest in moving the team out of Memphis. He's made that clear. I think there's obviously Nashville is a city on the rise. There's incredible things happening there. You know, if it were up to me, I'd love for them to play a few games a year in Nashville and sort of be Tennessee's team to the extent they can. But, you know, Memphis has been a great market historically for the NBA. It's, you know, amazing history in that city, amazing culture, you know, and it's a big country, you know. And so as I look out, you know, at our 30 teams, we want teams to be able to do well everywhere. We have a revenue sharing system, et cetera. But there's from my standpoint, there's no reason why the Memphis Grizzlies can't be successful.
That was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, I believe, on Pardon My Take, talking about all of the Memphis hate. We talked about that several weeks ago. But in there, Silver says, I wouldn't mind if the Grizzlies played a few games in Nashville every season, became Tennessee's team. What do you think about that idea?
This is why the NBA is where they're at. They have no backbone. I could never see Roger Goodell saying, well, I think Nashville, I think the Titans should play in Memphis.
A few games. Or Knoxville, a few games.
You know, to be Tennessee's team. That would, come on, man. Like, no. Memphis, okay? That's their team.
Yes, we've established
that. We've established. I'm a basketball guy. If Memphis was my team, I would love them. I like them now, but they're not my team. But that doesn't, just because they're Memphis doesn't make them not Tennessee's team. That would say, well, the Titans aren't Tennessee's team, which they are the state of Tennessee's team. The Tennessee Titans are. And I get it, it's the Memphis Grizzlies. But still, they have fans here in Nashville. They got fans in Knoxville. They got fans in Chattanooga. They don't need to travel around like the Globetrotters to get more. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, I could see if it was saying play a couple of games out of the country, which they do already. It's not like Nashville is another country. You would only do that if you're trying to spread your, you know, the footprint to another country.
To be fair, people who live in Nashville versus people who live in Memphis.
Watch yourself.
They might as well be two different countries
A lot of people. Watch yourself, because the people there, you just need to watch yourself. But, I mean, listen, we understand, and I'm just kidding with you.
I know you.
Understand that Nashville, Memphis, just like Memphis and Knoxville and Nashville and Knoxville, just they're different.
Yes.
All three are different. They have their own thing. But that doesn't make, since we have our own thing, we're different, then the Memphis Grizzlies need to travel to Knoxville to play to beat Tennessee's team, or they need to travel here or Clarksville. No, you want to go see the Memphis Grizzlies, go to Memphis to see them. They're still our team, Tennessee's team. That's why the NBA, get a backbone. Just get a backbone.
I think it shows a little disconnect of how the state works. It sounds good from afar to say, a couple games over in Nashville. But Memphis and Nashville don't crisscross.
That was my point.
Yeah.
They don't crisscross. It doesn't make sense. Would you take it if they offered it?
I mean, I would go.
Of course.
I wouldn't turn it down.
Well, depending on who they play.
Well, but I don't think Memphis would offer it. Unless they say, well, hey, Preds, why don't you guys play a couple games in Memphis?
Yes.
Predator fans wouldn't go for that, right?
No.
Grizzlies fan who's buying season tickets, like, wait a minute, I'm not going to go to Nashville for four games?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you wouldn't be charged probably for those tickets, but...
But it's still driving
you would be offended here. As a hardcore Grizzlies fan that, now I only get to see 38 games
instead
of 42?
Didn't the Montreal Expos play in San Juan, Puerto Rico?
At the end, yes. when it was obvious that they were not going to be able to sustain.
But they split time between the two places, right?
They did.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was weird.
Well, the Buffalo Bills played some games in Toronto not too long ago. And that was not, I don't think, ideal. When the Buffalo was going through their long stretch of nothingness before Josh Allen, between the Doug Flutie and the Music City Miracle.
I vaguely recall that.
So it has happened. But back in the day... It's become a long time ago now, but the Packers used to play some games in Milwaukee.
But that's different. You're going to another country to play games. So you're spreading your footprint.
Yeah, it's like 90 minutes away.
Yeah. Buffalo ain't leaving to go play in
Syracuse.
New York City. Yeah. New York City, something like that. They're not doing that. So I don't know. I mean, the NBA, it's like you're listening to the players a little bit too much. You know, why don't you, Adam Silver, why don't you help try to make Memphis better, the city better, instead of trying to take a few games from them and bring them to Nashville? Try making the city better. Help with that. And I'm sure they have been, but help more with that. And maybe players wouldn't argue so much or complain.
I've got it. Okay.
Stay in your damn room anyway, man. Shoot. You got a game the next day. What you out gallivanting around the city? Going and stay in your room.
But they don't like the rooms. That's the point. They don't like the hotel.
Well, the NBA, y'all got enough money. Build a nicer hotel.
Oh, okay. They're just going to
build a nicer hotel.
The NBA hotel.
Exactly. Build a nicer hotel.
You can take advice from LeBron James and Draymond Green and everybody else.
Guys that are getting ready to leave the league.
All right. I've got to read the headline of this story.
Yes, please.
A former Alabama defensive tackle pleaded guilty Monday to defrauding investors of millions of dollars by putting on makeup and wigs to impersonate NFL players.
Who did he impersonate?
Luther Davis, 37, entered guilty pleas in federal court in Atlanta to one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and one count of aggravated identity theft. C.J. Evans, 29, who was accused of executing the scheme with Davis, also pleaded guilty to the two charges. Man. I'm trying to find out. Okay. Davis wore disguises on multiple video calls with investors in 2024, pretending to be three different NFL players. He wore makeup and a wig once, a wig a second time, and a do-rag-style head covering on a third call, according to prosecutors who identified the players only by initials. Those players whose identities were allegedly used are Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Penix, former Cleveland Browns tight end David Njoku, and Green Bay Packers safety Xavier McKinney.
It wasn't the same person or two different people that did this.
Davis wore disguises on multiple video calls. It was one guy. He wore makeup and a wig once, a wig a second time, and a do-rag the third time.
What? What was the motive? Just to see if he could get away with it? Or was he like trying to like identity
theft? In court Monday, assistant U.S. attorney, C. Brock. Oh, my God. This guy's name is C. Brock Brockington.
Oh, wow.
C. Brock. Brock Brockington said the men used.
Movie character.
Fake bank and email accounts to help convince lenders they were either acting on behalf of particular athletes or were the athletes themselves. They later sought to impersonate higher profile players with bigger contracts.
Okay, so they were trying to get money out of this.
Yeah. Yes. The scheme brought in nearly $20 million from at least 13 fraudulent loans that Davis and Evans used in part to buy real estate, jewelry, and cars. God.
So it was working.
Davis was a national champion with Alabama in 2010.
Gosh.
Way to go, Nick Saban.
Nick, what's going on with your players?
So, like, for a while, it was working.
Exactly.
Can you imagine?
How would they work?
They got a wig
and... wow.
This reminds me.
I'm not gonna say you can't be fooled, but gosh,
it's like Ben Affleck in the
identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer every year.
Yeah, pretty much so.
Yes,
I was thinking Ben Affleck in Good Will Hunting. It was like retainer. Remember, he impersonates.
But all you have to do is Google
the job.
Like, Google has become like if. If you're coming to me, especially, and you say you are an NFL player, and this is, I'm going to Google you. Ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding, and your face, you pop up, and I'm looking, and I'm knowing, this, all black folks don't look like, and that don't look like you. I'm hanging up the phone right now.
I can't look like all three of those
guys.
That's
what I'm saying, Willie. That is exactly what I'm saying.
I can't get over the fact that the attorney's name is C. Brock Brockington. That's made up. By the way, one texter says the Spurs play two games in Austin, albeit they are closer, similar to Nashville and Murfreesboro. So I see your point there. That'll do it for us today. I need to look up a picture of C. Brock Brockington. You should all do that too. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We'll continue breaking down the NFL draft. We'll mix in some other topics as well because we like variety, and variety, of course, is the spice of life. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Monday. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music? Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.
Brock Brockington.
Yeah!